ramming against the Caprock Escarpment, a 200-mile stretch of caliche mesas running from New Mexico through West Texas to the Oklahoma borderline. Garrett was glad to have Tripp along for the ride, even though his inquiries could get downright intrusive at times, and even worse, bordering on sincere. But his friend had a big heart and tended to ask meaningful questions. It had always been his worst quality. Tripp leaned the passenger seat back, let out an exhausted sigh, and closed his eyes.
Thinking maybe that CAE gal got a thing for you, Quanah.
Tripp had taken to calling Garrett by a nickname given to him by his childhood best friend. Nobody found Garrett's Native American heritage more interesting than Tony Sanchez, an avid Texas history buff, an expert on regional indigenous cultures. Quanah was in reference to Quanah Parker, son of Comanche chief Peta Nocona, and Cynthia Ann Parker, a settler's daughter, who was kidnapped at an early age, but assimilated into the tribe. Both Sanchez and Tripp, who were descendants of a Texas Ranger and a Buffalo soldier, respectively, liked to point out that it was in their blood to go after Comanches. It had been their primary excuse when the ball breaking got a bit rough on their elk hunting trips in New Mexico. Garrett pointed out that it was in his blood to take the scalps of his enemies while they peacefully slept. Although his friends laughed it off, he noticed that the trash talk suddenly declined, possibly due to the bowie knife that he always kept nearby. Garrett shot Tripp an incredulous glare.
What are you talking about?
It took him a moment to realize that by a thing, Tripp was referring to something romantic.
Think that bump on the head gave you brain damage. You know exactly what I'm talking about.
Tripp cocked an eye open.
Way y'all were looking at each other? Batting eyes and all that mess?
I never batted a damn eye a day in my life. Tripp chuckled.
I'm just saying, man. If I was you, I'd...
You'd what? Make a move? Go on ahead, Tripp. Y'all are the ones all cozied up on the beach under the stars.
Cozied up?
Tripp shook his head, clearly riled by having the tables turned so quickly.
Almost got me killed by them bushwhacking pygmy assassins. Cozied up? You must be crazy.
It was Garrett's turn to chuckle, having gotten the better of his friend.
I'm spoken for with Lacey. You know that.
Finally got the girl of my dreams, and I'm not screwing it up. Tripp looked as if he was fantasizing, likely at the thought of Lacey.
Yeah, you got the girl of everybody's dreams. We'll just see for how long.
Growing up, Lacey Capshaw was the high school crush of every teenage boy in six counties. It had only taken Garrett a couple of decades to get her attention. He didn't mind that Tripp was jealous. Who wouldn't be? But the how long comment was a shot across the bow. Garrett looked at his friend askance. What's that supposed to mean?
Means you don't have a history of staying in one place too long. Kind of live like that Kwai Cheng Kane dude from Kung Fu. Just drifting from place to place your whole damn life.
Yeah, you're one to talk, rodeo star. Girl in every town. Garrett cut eyes at Tripp. Haven't seen you shopping for wedding rings, putting down any roots.
My rodeo days were a long time ago. And I'm not talking about my love life, Quanah. My girl and me, we got an understanding. I'm talking about yours, son. I'm talking about Lacey.
Garrett couldn't believe how quickly Tripp had spun the conversation focus back on him. Times change, and so do people. Got a boy to look after now. Never had that before.
And a hot lady, to boot.
Garrett conceded with a smile. And a hot lady to boot. He turned to Tripp, whose eyes were clamped shut again.
You convinced now? Convinced you're committed to that boy? Maybe Lacey, too? Still not sure about your CIA boss, though. I don't know much, but I do know the look. And she's got it for you.
Garrett shook his head. So we're back on her again.
Just saying. I know what I know.
Well, I know what I know, too. And know that after what happened down in Mexico, all I want is for things to get back to normal and slow the hell down. That's it. Tripp smiled.
Same here. Ready for a few cold carta blancas, some of Mama's home cooking, and a little me time out on Lake Meredith.
Garrett perked up at a mention of Mrs. Davis's home cooking. And I can be expecting an invite. When?
You've got a standing invitation with my mom. You know that.
Garrett's mouth was already watering.
and she knows what I want, right?
The four C's? Tripp chuckled. Catfish, coleslaw, cornbread, and cobbler.
Garrett had to laugh. Even Tripp knew it by heart.
Just making sure.
He turned to his friend for the next request. When you want to head out to the lake?
Nah, don't believe so, man.
Tripp took a moment, scowled, then shook off the suggestion like it was the worst idea he'd ever heard.
Thinking maybe that's a one-man job.
Garrett turned back, surprised. You're joking.
Hell nah, I ain't joking. Last time we went to Ute, you drank all my damn beer.
Tripp cocked an eye, looking deadly serious.
And my most recent memory of you on a lake ends with me almost getting killed. Nope. Uh-uh. Hard pass, buddy.
Done arguing, Garrett just shook his head and laughed. Letting his friend catch a little much-needed rest, he shut up and watched the road. Unfortunately, his mind drifted to the Asadi situation. While Garrett's visceral reaction to Kim's bad news was heartfelt, he wondered if he was thinking of the boy's well-being and not just his own. If Asadi wanted to be with blood relatives, then he would have to let him leave. But the thought of it alone was almost too hard to bear. 10. Garrett dropped Tripp off in Pampa, a gritty little oil field and agriculture town, once the stomping grounds of folk singer legend Woody Guthrie and Dog the Bounty Hunter, who not everyone claimed as a native son. The former residents of note captured the community in both look and spirit. Whether it was the rusted pump jacks to the south or the windswept ranches and farmland to the north, it was a place with a deep soul and tough-as-leather exterior. Pampa was put on the map by a businessman named Timothy Dwight Hobart, who'd ventured from Vermont to Texas after the late 1800s. He'd at one time managed over 1 million acres of land in the Texas panhandle and went on to run the nearby J.A. Ranch, founded by Scots-Irish businessman John George Adair, his wife Cornelia, and an illustrious cattleman, trailblazer, and Texas Ranger named Charles Goodnight. Garrett took Hobart Street past the hospital and slowed north of town at a state trooper speed trap before shooting up Perryton Highway to the ranch. With the broad plains on either side and the caprock on the horizon, he finally felt at peace. But it wasn't until he hit the bumpy Caliche Road to their farmhouse that the world felt right, and he could let his guard down. His change in disposition was partially due to the summer sunset, 1,000 shades of yellow, orange, and red. And some of it was kindled by the smell of fresh-cut alfalfa, lying in concentric circles beneath the half-mile-long center pivot irrigation system. But it was mostly the sight of Asadi driving that John Deere tractor. Whether on the back of a horse or working the soil, the orphan from Afghanistan wore a permanent grin. Farm life suited him. There was no doubt about it. Garrett was about to turn into the field to say hello when he noticed the white Ford F-150 pickup parked in front of the house. He pulled his black GMC 3/4-ton Sierra beside the empty fleet vehicle and saw the Talon Corporation sign on the door. Beneath it was a bird of prey with outstretched wings and claws, like the iconic emblem on the Pontiac Trans Am. Odds were the truck belonged to the oil company taking over from Mescalero Exploration, the energy firm owned by the wealthy Kaiser family, who'd reigned over the panhandle for decades. With the patriarch only recently dead and buried, Garrett assumed all drilling would come to a halt. And that suited him fine, since the coals owned the land, but none of the oil beneath. As J. Paul Getty once said, "The meek shall inherit the earth, but not its mineral rights." Curious to find out who was poking around on the place, Garrett put his truck in park and opened the door. Immediately, the oven-like August heat smacked him hard. He was moving toward the porch when he saw the Talon employee sauntering around the corner. Garrett spoke first in a direct tone. "Can I help you with something?" The guy looked startled by the question.
"Oh, hi there. Didn't see you pull up."
Garrett's first impression was this guy wasn't a local. He had slick-backed silver hair and wore a starched white dress shirt and navy sport coat. Too damn stifling for the 102-degree heat. He was wearing cowboy boots, but the cuffs of his blue jeans were way too short, just above the ankle. No way in hell this guy was from Texas. The stranger thumbed over his shoulder at the house.
"Knocked on the door, but nobody answered. Thought you might have been in the barn around back."
Garrett was tempted to rake this guy over the coals for venturing around the property without permission, but he was too tired from the long drive.
All he wanted was a hot shower, a cold Shinerbach, and to prop his feet up on the couch. Instead, Garrett was fielding a brand new aggravation. You the new landman?
Don't care for that term.
The stranger shook his head in disgust.
Bad connotation.
A landman was the guy or gal working for an oil and gas company whose job it was to secure mineral leases, procure easements onto the property, and settle surface issues with the landowner. There were good ones and bad ones, but he'd never thought of it as a dirty word. Maybe Garrett had enough energy to give this guy a little hell after all. And what connotation would that be? The guy ran his fingers through his hair for no real reason as he stammered through his answer.
Well, you know, someone out to take advantage of you.
Garrett crossed his arms. What makes you think someone could take advantage of me?
I mean, not you in particular, the man stammered. But I'm sure you've heard the stories about the ones out to steal your minerals, pollute your beautiful land, that kind of thing.
He smiled with the finish of his answer, clearly happy with the delivery. Garrett didn't budge. I'll have to tell my brother that, seeing as how he's done a good bit of land work himself. The man looked confused.
Bridger's the one who sent me out here.
Garrett was about to inquire further when his dad and Asadi pulled up in the white Ford flatbed dually pickup. Both doors flew open at the same time, but it was the boy who broke forth like a racehorse from the gates. He slammed into Garrett, wrapping him in his arms, and didn't let go until getting his fill. They're 3 weeks apart. That felt like an eternity. Garrett returned the embrace, yanked off Asadi's cowboy hat, and mussed his thick black hair.
Looking pretty good on that John Deere, outlaw. You're gonna put me out of a job.
Butch ambled up in no particular hurry.
Gonna.
Loaded for bear, the old man launched in with a trademark dig on Garrett's work ethic.
Told you the day you brung him here. Kid's half beaver, half plow horse. Outworks you and your brother on the best days you ever had.
He cocked an eyebrow.
Which were few and far between, I might add.
Used to his dad's not-so-subtle barbs, Garrett ignored the insult. Of course, shirking hard work had been Bridger's favorite pastime. It was possible Butch was lumping the two siblings into one, as parents tend to do. Before Garrett could state the obvious fact that they had a visitor, the old man piped up.
See, you met Mr. Holloway.
Garrett offered his hand in the obligatory salutation since Texas custom dictated it, even when meeting a sorry son of a bitch like this one.
Garrett Cole.
Tom Holloway.
Looking a little less nervous, the man shook Garrett's hand and glanced at his truck with the big screaming bird on the side.
Talon Corporation, as you can see.
Since it turned out Holloway wasn't a trespasser, Garrett felt a little guilty.
Sorry, I was a bit curt. Didn't know you'd been here.
Oh, I haven't. First time. No, I met your father over in Canadian.
Holloway added with a smile and nod.
When we had our meeting.
Meeting?
Garrett turned to his dad.
What meeting? When?
A couple days ago.
Butch seemed a bit sheepish, which was rare.
At Bridger's office.
Garrett's dad was a less chipper version of Clint Eastwood's character in Gran Torino. There was nary an occasion that he didn't go from crank to crazy in the blink of an eye. Garrett was tempted to give him the why in the hell wasn't I informed routine when he remembered he'd given strict instructions not to be bothered unless it was an emergency. Garrett turned back to Holloway.
Guess you better fill me in.
Holloway seemed to relax as he gave his spiel.
Not surprising to you or anyone else, I'm sure that following the untimely death of Preston Kaiser, the fate of Mescalero Exploration has been on everyone's minds. With over 500,000 acres under lease, the energy company's holdings are quite a prize.
Garrett shook his head and laughed. We've had a nice little vacation with Mescalero shut down. But all good things must come to an end, I guess. When do you start drilling?
Oh, we're not looking to drill, Mr. Cole. We're looking to dig.
When Garrett didn't respond, Holloway continued.
Rare earth minerals are the future, not hydrocarbons.
Rare earth minerals?
Garrett knew very little about them, other than what he'd read in a few articles. They'd made a huge find down around El Paso, and there were discoveries just north in Colorado and Nebraska. But he'd never heard mention of it in the Texas panhandle.
What makes you think you'll have any luck with that here?
Because we know where they are.
Holloway flashed a used car salesman's smile.
According to Mescalero's geological records, your property is rife with them.
Garrett didn't know what to think. On the one hand, he hated the idea of another boom of any kind. It meant construction, traffic, and lots of outsiders swarming their community. On the other, it meant good-paying jobs for those in desperate need. Aside from that, mineral leases came with big money. While material wealth had never particularly been on the forefront of his mind, he had responsibilities now, and a college fund for Asadi was at the top of the list. Moreover, Cole Ranch was falling into disrepair, and their herd was dwindling. A cash infusion could turn his 30-year plan for the family business into a 3-year plan. It was something to consider. Still, though, Garrett had learned over the years that the devil is in the details when dealing with energy companies, and he'd be damned sure to press his attorney brother on every single line of the contract. Garrett turned back to his dad. What did Bridger say? Guess he's seen the terms. Butch looked deflated.
Afraid the terms are the same as they were under the Mescalero lease. Not good. We get some fees for surface damages and new roads, but nothing more.
But this isn't an oil and gas play, Garrett argued. It's a whole new deal.
Afraid not, Holloway interjected. Not according to your lease. When the Kaisers bought the minerals, it included everything subsurface, to include what we're mining for now.
Garrett was primed to argue, but didn't doubt Holloway was correct. Garrett's grandfather, among many other farmers and ranchers in the area, had signed the deals back in the drought of the 1950s. Desperate to keep what they had afloat, they essentially signed over the rights to everything beneath the surface with no way of knowing what that would mean for generations to come. In Texas, minerals were the dominant estate, meaning the surface owner has less rights than the ones who own the resources beneath. Even in court, their objections would fall on deaf ears. They could even be forcibly removed by law enforcement if they tried to stop it.
Butch piped up. Had a good discussion with Bridger on all this, and he tells me we're not without some recourse. Said we'll have a say on how this looks in terms of road construction and keeping trucks and heavy machinery away from our house and the horses.
Holloway perked up with Butch's mention of this small silver lining.
That's right, Mr. Cole. You'll have some say.
Butch perked up too, but not in a good way.
You come on here digging up my ranch and I'll have a big say on what happens.
Within reason, Holloway clarified. Some things can't be changed.
He scanned the entirety of the ranch and swung his arm across the horizon.
Like where we dig, for example. The minerals are where they are. Nothing can be done about that.
Garrett knew that Talon's lawyers had already thought that through. He'd talk to Bridger, regroup, and see what they could do, if anything, to keep their pristine ranch from being destroyed.
Now hold on a minute.
Butch marched up to Holloway.
You never said this thing was going to be right in my backyard.
You'll be compensated for any inconvenience, Mr. Cole.
It's not a damn inconvenience, Butch shot back. It's the destruction of the land I've devoted my life to protect. Now, I couldn't stop Mescalero from drilling it full of holes and running trucks up and down the road all day, but I can stop you from digging a pit to hell.
It was Holloway's turn to look sheepish.
Well, I was hoping it wouldn't come to this.
Come to what? Garrett asked.
If you'll look at your Mescalero lease, you'll notice a clause that specifically gives our company the right to dig where we want. Take whatever operational steps necessary for extraction. Same reason an oil company is allowed to drill water wells for drilling and hydraulic fracturing. It's necessary for company operations. It's right there in your terms. Plain as day.
You need water? Garrett pressed. Holloway gave a nod.
Big part of the mining operation, but you'll be compensated.
I don't want to be compensated. Garrett pointed to the center pivot irrigation system in the hayfield by the house. Water around here is scarce enough. I want to guarantee you won't suck this place dry. Since Garrett returned home from Afghanistan 9 months prior, he had added 2 more pivots to their original holdings. Between the new land he purchased and the investment in the irrigation system, he had taken on significant debt. Horses and cattle had kept Butch afloat, but for Garrett to return and to have something to pass on to Asadi, They needed a money-making enterprise. Access to good water wasn't just nice to have. It would literally save the ranch. Can't promise we won't make a dent on the water table. Hard to predict. Holloway shrugged. But I can tell you we'll only take what we need, and no more. Garrett couldn't believe it. This company was going to kill his hay operation. Who's your boss? I gotta talk to someone about this. Our headquarters is in Chicago. Holloway reached into his inside coat pocket and took out a business card. I'll give you the number if you want to lodge a complaint. Before Garrett could take it, Butch moved nearer to Holloway.
You never mentioned anything about water before.
Holloway looked as if he'd never really thought about it. I mean, who really needs that much water out here, Mr. Cole? You're in the middle of nowhere.
No, son, you're in the middle of nowhere.
Butch jabbed his finger into Holloway's chest.
This is my home. It may be flyover country to you, but it's the heart of everything in the world that matters to me.
He tilted his head at Garrett and Asadi,
and it's their future.
Holloway took a few steps backward and returned the business cards to his pocket.
I'm sorry, sir. But all that's irrelevant in the eyes of the law. You just have to accept that.
Butch advanced toward Holloway.
Like hell I will.
Moving quick, Garrett caught his dad by the shoulder.
Whoa, whoa, not like this, Daddy. Won't do any good.
He could feel Butch trembling with rage. Gotta handle this in a legal way.
Bridger will know what to do.
Holloway made a beeline for his truck, opened the door.
I'll send the plans over to your son in Canadian.
Before hopping in and closing the door, he added,
I'm really sorry, Mr. Cole, but you can't stop progress.
Garrett couldn't help but chuckle. Butch had written the book on stopping progress. It was an angry dissertation built upon the actions and philosophies of ill-tempered curmudgeons through time immemorial. If the codger hadn't backed down to blizzards, wildfires, and tornadoes, he damn sure wouldn't kowtow to this landman who wasn't a landman. Whether Tom Holloway knew it or not, Talon had picked a hell of a fight by setting foot on the Cole Ranch. 11. Smitty had never returned home a hero before in his life. On parole, for sure. Drunken stumblebum many a time, but never once with his sword held high. And the worst part of it was that he couldn't tell a soul that he had risked it all to save three others. Not only had he signed a plea deal with the feds, but he'd sworn an oath to that feisty little blonde named Kim, who'd threatened him with tortures he couldn't even pronounce. What hurt the most was that he couldn't tell his daughter. His wife probably figured him for a perennial disappointment, but his darling girl still thought he hung the moon. Of course, bringing Garza to justice had bought him his freedom, and that was all that mattered. He just wanted some peace. Smitty pulled into the rundown trash dump of an RV park on the outskirts of Canadian and read the paint-chipped sign at the entrance to Misty Mobile, which he'd redubbed Misery Mobile. His wife, Crystal, was out in front of their orange and white Shasta camper, spraying down their daughter, Savannah, with a garden hose. The fan belt on his 90s model Chevy pickup had a distinctive shriek that caught their attention. As usual, his wife's hair was windblown and bushy, the texture of frayed burlap. A fresh dousing of peroxide left it chamois yellow, with a few odd patches the color of styrofoam. She was wearing her Daisy Duke getup, a red skin-tight tank top and denim short shorts. It meant she was either getting off shift at the bar or getting ready to start one. Upon seeing Smitty pull up behind her gold Pontiac Fiero, Crystal barely registered an expression. His daughter, in gym shorts and one of his old undershirts, was for some reason covered in mud. She lit up like a Christmas tree and made a break for his truck, but her mother yanked her back and kept scrubbing at her mousy ringlets. Smitty parked on the brown patches of what was considered their lawn, shut off the truck, and stepped outside.
Well, what happened here?
Been on the river catching crawdads.
His daughter's reply was more of a boast, probably because she knew he'd be jealous. She slithered past Crystal and darted to Smitty for a wet hug. With her arms tight around his waist, he reached inside the truck and pulled out her South of the Border souvenir. On the front of the t-shirt was a mustachioed, sombrero-wearing cartoon worm that was coiled into a shot glass. The Don Chucho tequila slogan beneath it read, "Don't be afraid," which Smitty assumed meant, "Don't be afraid to eat the worm." It wasn't appropriate for an 11-year-old, but for a guy who was afraid of everything, it struck a chord.
Seriously?
Crystal wasn't happy, which was evident by the way she threw her hand on her hip.
Why don't you just get her a pack of Newports while you're at it?
I know. Smitty pushed the air. But hear me out first. Crystal's face said everything. She wasn't interested in an explanation, but that didn't stop him from giving one. You see now, it's just that it was the first time I'd ever been overseas, and I wanted her to have something exotic. Crystal still wasn't impressed.
She can't wear it to school, you know.
Smitty conceded with a shrug. Just thought she could wear it when she's just hanging out with her buds. You know, down at the arcade or whatever.
Arcade?
Savannah burst into laughter.
This isn't Stranger Things, Dad. Arcades don't even exist anymore.
They do so. Seen them down in Pampa a while back. Even Crystal laughed.
Those places were full of slot machines, and they shut those down a long time ago. Not a good hangout for your daughter and her buds.
She did the air quotes. He hated when she did air quotes. Well, when I was her age, kids hung out, went places, did things, weren't sitting around on the couch playing Minesweeper all day.
Minecraft, Dad.
Savannah laughed even harder.
Not whatever you just said.
You know, Ray, if you'd spent more time in school instead of going places and doing things,
Crystal made air quotes again,
maybe you'd have stayed out of trouble.
Smitty didn't bother to fight her. It was all true. Possibly recognizing he wasn't in the mood for teasing, Crystal's eyes warmed and her voice softened.
And speaking of trouble, how are we in that department?
Smitty snatched the beach towel off the ground and handed it to Savannah. Why don't you dry off inside and grab me a pearl? He'd been dreaming of a cold beer the whole trip home. I'll be there in a minute. Always the dutiful daughter, she did as she was told. It was obvious Crystal wanted to talk. His wife waited until the screen door slammed behind Savannah to begin.
So what happened? You do everything you were supposed to do.
For a man who'd spent his entire life lying, sworn silence was a fitting punishment. Now that Smitty wanted to tell the truth, the whole truth and nothing but the truth, he couldn't. She didn't know about Garrett, Malik, or Tripp, and she sure as hell didn't know anything about the CIA. All he could do was confirm that the plan worked, they were safe, and their lives were their own.
Yep, it's done. We're in the clear.
Crystal moved close, took him into her arms, and buried her face in his chest. She sniffed a little and stifled a sob.
Now what?
Ray drew her into him tight.
Now life goes back to normal. I get a regular job, make some money, and get us out of this dump.
Crystal pulled back and surveyed the dusty grounds of the RV park. As if on cue, a pack of mangy dogs darted from behind a dumpster to beneath an abandoned airstream.
It ain't so bad, really. Get a nice breeze up here around evening.
Breeze is God's doing. I want to build something on my own.
Smitty turned to find Doris Gunderson, their nosy next-door neighbor, at her window, eavesdropping again.
And I want a place with some privacy.
Stressing the word sent Doris retreating behind the curtains. Smitty looked into Crystal's eyes.
What do you think? Land of her own in the country? Some horses?
Crystal smiled.
Think if you want all that, I'll need a better job than what I got.
Smitty never liked her working at Crippled Crow's anyhow. The bar was full of derelicts from every walk of life. Convict cowboys, meth head truckers, oil-filled roughnecks, and roustabouts of the trashiest sort. The only thing he still liked about his old stomping grounds was the fact he'd met Crystal there. But they both needed a change.
Got a buddy doing some dozer work over in Borger says something might be opening up. Reckon I'll head over tomorrow and see if there's anybody looking for a hand.
Like Smitty, the town of Borger had a checkered past. It had once been a wild and woolly Old West kind of oil boom town in the 1920s, and a hub of organized crime that included bootlegging, gambling, and prostitution. Robbery and murder were so rampant that the governor ordered the Texas Rangers, under the command of legendary Captain Frank Hamer, who later killed Bonnie and Clyde, to move in and bring the town under control. Crystal's hand flew to her chest.
Oh, wait. You haven't even heard. There's a new company in town that took over Mescalero. Talon Corp. Paying big money. Great benefits.
Smitty hadn't seen Crystal this excited since her nemesis at Crippled Crow's got a wicked case of conjunctivitis and had to wear an eye patch. He didn't want to burst her bubble, but he didn't want to get her hopes up either. His criminal record was a hell of an albatross.
Well, I ain't ever heard of Talon, Smitty confessed. But that don't mean nothing. There's a million of them companies around.
She shook her head.
Not like this one. To hear folks tell it, they got deep pockets.
Kaiser's got deep pockets too.
No, I mean real deep. Like this company's got big mining projects all over the country. Colorado, Nebraska, Wyoming.
Mining?
Now Smitty's skepticism was on nitrous. Rumors around the Texas panhandle spread like wildfire. At times, he wondered which of the two did more damage.
You had me up to then.
He shook off the suggestion.
Nah, I'll just stick to what I know.
Crystal's hand was back on her hip again.
And what's that?
Oil and gas.
Well, I hope you got a time machine then, Ray, because them oil boom days are long gone, and they ain't coming back.
There'll be something out there,
he assured, not really knowing if there would be. But when she gave him those eyes, the ones that said, not even for me, he relented.
All right, there's bound to be a main office somewhere. I'll talk to them tomorrow.
Crystal took him by the hand and led him inside the camper. There'd be plenty of time to find a job. For now, he just wanted to enjoy having his life back. That, and a cold one. 12. As Garrett stared across his kitchen table at Lacey Capshaw, he couldn't help but think on what he'd nearly lost. Of course, he couldn't tell her what happened on the Garza operation, and really had no desire to. His beautiful high school crush with ice blue eyes, thick chestnut hair, and killer curves had pledged her heart to him. And in return, he'd given her his own. She hadn't just been a girlfriend. She'd been a surrogate mother to Asadi and had helped them turn their old farmhouse into a beautiful home. But it wasn't just the help she'd provided in picking out paint and new furniture. It was the warmth of her smile and the melody of her laughter that brought their world to life. Even his dad admitted as much. He said Lacey was the daughter he'd never had. Of course, he actually did have one. They just hadn't spoken in months. Grace lived down in Midland, but they'd had a big blow-up over something Garrett couldn't recall, and each one was waiting for the other to concede defeat. Long bouts of brooding silence were a family tradition, like fireworks on Christmas Eve and soul-crippling insults. Butch was like the bizarro world version of Joel Osteen to anybody but Asadi, who he treated like a prince. There'd been a hole in the man's life that hadn't been filled until the kid joined the family. Lacey got a pass, too, even though she was always on Butch to eat healthier due to his high cholesterol. The man was in every way the opposite of a good patient, particularly when it came to dietary restrictions. Butch had once chucked his boot at his television for Rachel Ray having merely suggested you could substitute sour cream with Greek yogurt. Lacey passed the plate of fried chicken first to Asadi, who was bouncing in his chair.
You really that hungry, young man?
She cut a stern look at Garrett that was meant to be playful.
Need to talk to someone around here about feeding you better.
With eyes like saucers, Asadi snatched a couple of drumsticks from the heaping platter. His nodding was the next level of enthusiastic.
Thank you.
Butch looked as eager.
If I could move like that without cracking my pelvis, I'd be just as jumpy.
He shot her a smile.
Been out baling hay all day and never took a lunch break.
Lacey sent a helping of mashed potatoes counterclockwise around the table.
Alfalfa looks beautiful.
Adding with a pass of the cream gravy,
smells like heaven too.
Well, it couldn't have come at a better time. To keep the herd in Bermuda we got, we're damn sure gonna need every bale. Unless we get some rain soon.
You're not the only one worried.
Lacey restocked her plate.
The drought is all anyone can talk about at the cafe. Bad out there. Bet you're glad you got those center pivots now.
Garrett had purchased the land adjacent to their property from their longtime neighbor, Kate Shaughnessy, taking their property from 9,000 to 17,000 acres, a little over 26 square miles. Garrett shook his head in disbelief. Still can't believe Kate sold to us. Never thought she would, you know, with her girls and all. Thought there might be some hard feelings.
Them girls don't give a rat's ass, Butch guffawed. But the truth of the matter is, Kate would have never sold to anyone but you.
Don't know about that.
Garrett countered. Butch had a twinkle in his eye that accompanied his teasing.
I always had a crush on you.
Daddy, that's just sick. She's...
old?
Butch's face morphed into a scowl.
Well, so am I. But that doesn't mean I can't appreciate something that catches my eye.
He winked at Lacey.
And damn sure it doesn't mean I don't have an appetite.
Butch took a big bite of his chicken leg to drive home the point. Garrett shook his head.
Again, Daddy, just plain sick.
If Butch wanted a female companion, there were plenty of local widows nearby, Kate being one of them. There was no need to go scouring the earth. The week before, Butch had yelled at some poor customer service rep from a single rancher's dating website over the fact that he couldn't download their networking app to his landline. It was proof positive that the old man was too out of touch to be carousing online. With another pass of the fried chicken, Lacey asked with a timid smile,
So, this it for a while, Garrett? You don't have any more trips planned, do you?
The quick switch of topic took Garrett off guard. He stumbled a little in answering, because he could honestly say he didn't know. Kim Manning lived for the next mission. If he had to guess, she was already in the planning stages. Garrett gave a shake of the head.
Nah, I'm here for a while.
He added with the caveat,
far as I know.
Taking another drumstick, he handed it off the platter to Asadi, who was eagerly awaiting a third helping.
Supposed to head down to Amarillo this week and check in.
Since taking a bullet 9 months earlier, Garrett had been on mandatory desk duty at the local DEA office. Given his recent performance, he knew he was fit enough for the field, but some bureaucrat back at headquarters in Virginia still thought otherwise.
What then?
Lacey asked.
This mother of two understood the kind of work he did was dangerous, but it didn't mean she wasn't planning for the future.
And if his future included an early death at the hands of deadly drug runners, she wasn't on board.
Well, hopefully I'll get an assignment here.
Garrett immediately regretted using the word hopefully, but it was the God's honest truth, and he didn't want to lie to someone he loved.
Lacey looked disgusted.
Sounds uncertain.
You gotta understand, Lace. Navigating the process at DEA is a bit tricky. Takes time to finesse something like that.
How much time?
She shot back. The moment was bordering on awkward, one of those unexpected defining the relationship conversations that happened to be playing out in front of his dad and the boy. But Asadi, who was too consumed with his drumstick, didn't even notice. Butch, on the other hand, who got the hint, eased his chair back and grabbed his plate as he stood.
Just remembered I need to check on something out in the barn.
The old man was no stranger to confrontation. He almost lived for it. But inquiries of the romantic sort were tantamount to the Spanish Inquisition.
Come on, outlaw. Grab your plate. You can eat while we work.
Oblivious to the reasoning behind the sudden exodus, Asadi scooped up his meal, snatching two more drumsticks for the road. It wouldn't be the first meal they'd eaten on the job. Of course, a meal on the tractor or out working cattle usually consisted of saltines, summer sausage, and cheddar cheese, not Lacey's famous fried chicken. But the boy made no fuss, just followed Butch out the door, still gnawing on a leg. Garrett had expected Lacey to object, but when she didn't, he knew it was serious. Before he could ask, her eyes softened and her face fell. She was embarrassed.
Garrett, I'm sorry. I didn't mean to run everyone off from supper. I feel awful.
Garrett shook his head and laughed. Don't worry about those two. They're happiest with the horses. He tilted his head toward the barn. Asadi would sleep out there if we'd let him. Lacey looked genuinely relieved.
I don't just mean them. I mean you too. Having just taken a bite of potatoes, he waved her off.
Trust me, I'm good.
Not about dinner, for putting you on the spot, especially in front of your family.
Don't sweat it. Nothing gives me more pleasure than to watch Daddy squirm.
Lacey chuckled again.
Can't say I've ever seen him move that quick. But seriously, I don't want to put pressure on you. A lot has happened since you've moved home, and it's all happening fast.
Lacey, I'm glad it's happening fast. You're my future. I want you to know that.
I believe that, Garrett, I really do. But you have to understand that my life isn't my own. I have two kids to consider, and their dad lives here. If you take some assignment somewhere else, I can't go.
I won't leave my children under any circumstances. You know that, right?
Garrett fully understood her predicament. Because of Asadi, his life wasn't his own either. And he still hadn't ruled out making a run for it if they tried to take him away. But he'd made an open-ended deal with Kim that tethered him to the CIA. He couldn't make any promises to Lacey until his obligation was fulfilled.
I hear what you're saying, and I'd never expect you to leave your kids behind. I'm working on my situation. With everything in me, I'm working on it. I promise.
Garrett hoped she believed him, but it was clear by the look on her face that his words weren't doing the trick this time.
What is it, Lacey?
Something else is going on.
Lacey's hesitation was obvious. There was reluctance in her voice. Well, it's Travis again.
Travis. Garrett hated that name. Lacey's ex-husband, a successful doctor who lived in Amarillo, had been a constant thorn in his side. In 9 months of dating, they'd still never met, but Garrett had heard enough to form a good opinion. Travis Mansfield had cheated on Lacey multiple times during their marriage, acts of infidelity he'd attributed to a prescription drug addiction coupled with alcohol abuse. Dr. Travis had cleaned up enough to get joint custody of the kids, but Garrett didn't buy the victim of the disease excuse he'd sold to everyone else. In fact, he didn't buy the fact that Travis's sudden epiphany came from his sobriety. It was more a case of a man who once had everything, suddenly concluding that Lacey no longer wanted him. His woman had found true happiness with Garrett, and it just killed her ultra-competitive ex-husband to know there was something he couldn't have. Garrett recognized the poor effort he made in hiding his contempt. So, what did Dr. Feelgood do this time? Lacey ignored the jab like she always did.
Well, he made this big plea about how he wants us to do more as a family.
A family? Now Garrett's contempt wasn't masked at all. But you aren't a family. You're divorced. He had his chance, then he blew it multiple times, in case you forgot.
No, I haven't forgot. And I told him that very clearly and in no uncertain terms, but he told me he's reading some book his therapist gave him about co-parenting, about how just because you're not a traditional family unit doesn't mean you're not still a family, blah, blah, blah.
That sounds like the biggest load of bull.
I know, Garrett, I know. But it got me to thinking.
What's there to think about? It's a load of crap. Lacey was less contrite now and getting more worked up by the second.
Well, I was thinking about family, for one thing. It's not my children's fault that theirs isn't together.
And it's not yours either, Garrett fired back. Travis chose to party rather than be there for you and the kids. There are consequences for that, and he's paying for it now.
I know that, too, but the kids are caught in the middle, in a place where they get screwed out of a normal childhood.
Normal childhood? No such thing. Garrett's mother died when he was a little older than Asadi. Butch had turned to the bottle in the early years, leaving Garrett, Bridger, and Grace to fend for themselves. But it was in that tragic memory, reliving what he'd gone through, that he started to think things over. Because he'd suffered doesn't mean Lacey's kid should too. Garrett took a deep breath.
All right. What does this new kind of family thing entail?
Just doing more together. Activities like going bowling, Asad Poodle's baseball game, going for a hike at Palo Duro Canyon, stuff like that.
Sounded like a traditional family to Garrett, but he didn't say anything.
Okay, you're a wonderful mom, and I know you've always got your kids' best intentions at heart.
He sighed, louder than intended.
If this is what you need to do for them, then we'll get through it.
Lacey smiled, clearly relieved to get that revelation off her chest.
Thank you for being so understanding about this.
Garrett nodded graciously, but all he could think about was clocking Travis in the jaw. It wasn't lost on him that Lacey's ex had a lot to offer. He was worldly, successful, and most importantly, her kid's real father. Garrett knew that living the high life and luxury no longer really mattered to her, but security and stability did. And that wasn't lost on the guy who'd just returned from battling cartel assassins down in Mexico. Hoping to change the subject, Garrett was just about to bring her up to speed on the earlier debacle with Talon when she brought it up on her own.
Did you hear the great news? About the new company that just moved into the area?
Talon Corporation, Garrett offered up begrudgingly. Lacey frowned.
You don't look thrilled.
Trust me. A smile broke across Garrett's face. Got a few good reasons.
Well, you're the only one in the panhandle that's not dancing for joy. They say Talon's going to save us. Hundreds of jobs. Good jobs. A whole new world for all of us just trying to eke out a living. For everyone like me who lost their job after Mescalero went under.
Talon should have hired Lacey to deliver the news. Her pitch and enthusiasm nearly had him on board.
And it made Garrett think that maybe he was being selfish, that by impeding this project on the ranch, he was taking bread from the mouths of others. But he also felt a deep desire to protect the land that he loved.
Being a quarter Comanche on his mother's side, this subject had come up around her family's dinner table over in Lawton, Oklahoma, plenty of times. And he now knew, to a small degree, what it was like to lose your home and way of life in the name of progress. Instead of railing against Talon like he'd planned, he decided to wait and see what she knew. So what's the good word on our savior, Talon? Lacey looked like she was bursting to tell him the news.
Well, their Texas division will be headquartered in Borger, where the Kaiser's Mescalero refinery was located. Even took over their old carbon black plant on the west side of town. Talon is supposed to offer competitive pay, full health benefits, and a matching 401k.
Nearby Borger, located north of a 100,000-acre division of the Four Sixes Ranch and on the south side of the Canadian River, had become an energy industry hub, in large part due to Phillips Petroleum. It was also home to several other petrochemical facilities that process oil and natural gas, to include one of the largest of these type of refineries in the world. Garrett knew he should be formulating a rebuttal to Lacey's news, but he was starting to wonder if he should apply. Kinda sounds like you're interested.
Dropped off my resume 3 days ago.
Lacey's eyebrows raised in anticipation of Garrett's excitement.
They said I'd get an answer within the week.
That's just great. Not only was Garrett about to put the brakes on an opportunity for everyone in 10 counties, but he was ruining his girlfriend's hopes and dreams as well. There had to be a middle ground. With nothing to do about it for the moment, Garrett hoisted his Shinerbach in a toast. Well then, here's to you. He nearly choked out the rest. And Talon Corporation, I guess. Face beaming at the prospect, Lacey returned the toast. With her satisfied and himself ready to celebrate the victory over the Garza cartel, Garrett allowed himself a moment not to worry about the ranch. He talked to his lawyer brother first thing in the morning. Bridger was a loophole mastermind, particularly when it came to mineral rights. He'd know just what to do. 13. Garrett assumed Bridger had gone over that mineral lease 1,000 times, but maybe this was the eureka moment, the one in movies where the attorney suddenly remembers an arcane law school case that saves the day. So far, though, nothing had emanated other than a bunch of tisk-tisks and disappointed groans. Nervous with anticipation, Garrett got up from the chair in front of Bridger's desk and wandered around the small law office in downtown Canadian. The place looked more like a museum of the American West than a place you'd tend to any real legal issues, but that hadn't hurt the practice. In an old-school town like Canadian, getting litigious was as uncouth as farting at the supper table or taking the Lord's name in vain. It was the last place locals wanted to be, particularly given his brother's ungodly fees. Among the photos of the ranch was Bridger's favorite roping horse and a few action shots of him back when he was winning buckles during his rodeo days. To the right was a framed article of a case involving a wildfire he'd litigated a few years back. He'd helped to settle a claim as local counsel against a negligent power company, responsible for a blaze that killed several local residents and destroyed nearly 500 square miles of ranch land. While the Texas Panhandle maintains an elite team of volunteer firefighters, the sheer size and speed of the inferno made it difficult to contain, particularly with wind gusts topping 55 miles per hour and changing directions frequently. The land and its inhabitants eventually bounced back, but it wasn't an easy recovery, particularly given the devastating loss of both human and animal life. Thinking on how hard it would be to lose loved ones in such a horrible way, Garrett was nearly startled when Bridger spoke up from behind. He turned to find his brother was still staring down at the lease. What'd you say, Bridge?
I said I'm sorry, but there's nothing we can do.
Bridger looked up from the document.
The lease is tight as a drum.
Switching mental gears, Garrett moved back to the desk, sat again, and stared at his brother, hoping his show of indignation would prompt something better than a nothing we can do.
It wasn't what Garrett wanted to hear, and it pissed him off that Bridger was rolling over and giving up so easy.
What do you mean? We can fight.
Fight what? The Mescalero lease was terrible back in the 50s, and it's terrible now. Left us wide open for something like this.
For drilling, Garrett argued, not mining. Says nothing about that.
You're right.
Bridger gave a nod.
That's why it's brilliant. It gives the leaseholder carte blanche to do whatever they want when it comes to any minerals underground.
But surely we have the right to keep them from destroying the property.
Mining the property, Bridger corrected. Destroying is in the eye of the beholder.
Garrett sat back, stunned. Sounds like you're defending them.
I'm talking to you like your lawyer right now, not your brother.
Then don't. Garrett was almost shouting. Talk to me like a guy who's about to lose his family home. Like a guy who cares about the land where his mother is buried.
Invoking their mother in a similar argument had caused a rift so deep the brothers didn't talk for 3 years. Garrett didn't want to go there again, particularly when they were finally back on good terms, so he backed off quick.
Look, I didn't mean to throw that in your face.
Yeah, you did. Bridger shot back, and you have every right to. But I just want you going into this thing eyes wide open.
He pointed out the window to Main Street.
People here are ecstatic about this, Garrett. You're not just fighting Talon. You're fighting your neighbors. Hell, your own damn girlfriend. The community needs this. Desperately.
Bridger was right, and Garrett hated it.
He sat quiet before delivering a half-hearted rebuttal.
Well, folks are so thrilled with it, they can do it on their own property.
You know that's not how it works.
Bridger shook his head.
Look, I've seen Holloway's mineral maps, and Coal Ranch is smack dab in the fairway. And just so you know, we're not the only one they're mining on. They've got several other sites here as well.
Let me guess, Garrett added. No one else has a problem but us.
Some are absentee landowners who could care less.
Bridger rubbed the tip of his thumb with his index and middle fingers.
And some want the money. As far as I know, we're the only ones making a stink.
What about our reps? State and local politicians. Surely somebody's thinking about property rights issues.
Nope.
Bridger waved him off. They wouldn't even return my phone calls.
For them, it's all about the tall green. Voters with money in their pockets are happy voters. Voters who contribute to campaigns. Barking up the wrong tree, thinking Austin or Washington's gonna jump on Team Coal. Hell, the county judge has plans for the funds he thinks are coming in. Last time I saw him and the mayor, they looked like kids on Christmas morning. City Council is already talking about expanding the courthouse.
Bridger was right.
They couldn't blame politicians for wanting to better the lives of many at the expense of a few. Still, though, keeping the High Plains from being pilfered and polluted had to count for something.
Garrett decided to throw his Hail Mary. Well, these strip mines aren't exactly without environmental impact, you know. I've been doing some research.
You and me both. But for every concern you raise, Talon's got an answer.
Bridger chuckled. This Holloway's a hell of a sharp land man.
Garrett crossed his arms. Claims he's not a land man.
Well, whatever he is, he knows his business. And this ain't his first rodeo. Came at me well prepared, that's for sure. He's got a whole team of lawyers up in Chicago backing him up.
Maybe we get our own team. You know legal experts in this area, right?
Bridger leaned back into his chair and smiled.
Bucky Talon is coming to the ranch, and they're coming soon. And they've got every legal right to be there. Any lawyer who's being honest about it will tell you the exact same thing.
Conceding this Talon project might be inevitable, Garrett turned to the best alternative.
What about payment for surface damages?
We'll be paid at market rate.
Bridger picked up the contract, flipped a couple of pages, and focused in on a section.
Water, too. And they'll be needing plenty of it.
Yeah.
Garrett gave a defeated nod.
That's what Holloway said.
Destruction of the property was one thing, but the thought of a major drawdown on the water table had kept them up all night, tossing and turning. Operationally, it'd be devastating. Financially, it'd ruin him. If it actually came to that scenario, Garrett's whole plan to return home for good and make the ranch a viable money-making enterprise had just bit the dust. Part 2.
Who led thee through that great and terrible wilderness, wherein were fiery serpents and scorpions and drought, where there was no water? Deuteronomy chapter 8, verse 15. 14. Asadi had come to look forward to the morning horseback rides more than anything in the world. When he and Butch first began them, months before, they were an intense affair, lesson after lesson of basic instruction, most of which he couldn't understand. But over time, both his command over the English language and sureness as a rider had improved by leaps and bounds. Whether with Garrett or Butch, it was a time to bond. Sure, it was work. They were training young colts that they would eventually sell. But it was so much more. It was the thousand colors of a sunrise, the wafting aroma of juniper, and the sight of pronghorn antelope bounding across the plains. Except for the occasional jet streaking across the sky, the place was a time machine to a magical land where adventure abounds, and the Wild West was as wild as ever. Cole Ranch could never replace the home where he was born, but mostly because of his family. Asadi missed them every day, and always would. But in the quiet of early morning, with only the steady cadence of hoofbeats, he heard his mother's heaven-sent voice on the breeze and in the rustle of swaying grass. Her whisper was clear as the sky. "I'm okay, son. And you will be too." Butch stood in the stirrups and turned to Asadi.
"What in the world is that?"
Asadi raised up too, but got little better vantage.
"What do you see?"
Butch didn't answer immediately, still staring. His answer came out more like a question.
"Damned if I know."
Asadi climbed atop the saddle, moving to the seat's cantle to get as high as possible. He finally saw what had gotten Butch's attention. About 100 yards ahead, a line of more than a dozen semi-trucks hauling heavy machinery and equipment on their backs. A few even pulled houses behind them. Blocking their path was their neighbor, Kate Shaughnessy, her giant diesel pickup parked crossways on the road. Standing before the convoy stood the little redhead woman, one hand on her hip, the other raised in a halting motion like a crossing guard.
"Uh-oh." Butch turned to Asadi, looking a bit nervous. "We better get over there before this turns ugly."
He gave a palatal click, and Skip rumbled into a trot. Asadi had just nodded in agreement when Grizz lurched without warning. Not yet in the stirrups, he nearly tumbled off backward, which would not have been the first time. In seconds, Asadi caught Butch's buckskin and pulled up alongside them. They rode at a quick clip, trading the earlier soft clop of lazy hooves for the three-beat pattern of urgency. Butch eased back in the saddle to bring Skip into a lope. Asadi followed suit when he saw exactly why. On the other side of the halted convoy was the sheriff's white 4x4 pickup, with flashing red and blue lights on top. A deputy's SUV was parked wonky in the bar ditch to the right. Both drivers took cover behind their doors, guns drawn, and aimed at Kate. Butch thrust his weight into the stirrups to bring Skip to a halt. He put his palms up before addressing the armed men.
"Whoa, whoa. What's going on here, boys?"
It was Kate who piped up first.
"Told this sumbitch the other day I didn't want no damn giant crater on the place."
Asadi recognized the one sitting in the passenger seat. He was the same silver-haired man who was at the house the day before. He yelled something out of the window as he opened the door and stepped outside. Behind him in the back seat was a pretty blonde woman, dressed much too fancy for a hot, dusty ranch. The man raised his hands and eased to the front. Butch cupped his hand and put it beside his mouth.
"That you, Holloway?"
Holloway turned to Butch, wearing a look of anguish.
"Mr. Cole, can you please try and talk some sense into her?"
Kate stepped toward the front of the SUV and whapped the hood with her right palm.
"Screw you! We're past that now."
"You don't even own the property anymore, Mrs. Shaughnessy."
Holloway seemed to have grown some courage with Butch's arrival. "The Coles do."
"Yeah, but I own this house and the porch that wraps round it, and I intend to kick my feet up here until I die."
The sheriff spoke up.
"Kate, nobody's saying you can't do that."
She turned her ire on him.
"Put up an oil derrick, I don't care. They come and go in a month. But I've seen on the Google some of them big ugly holes this company's done dug, dump a bunch of chemicals and pollute the aquifer."
"Not us," Holloway countered. "Those were other companies, I can assure you. Talon has an outstanding record on environmental safety.
there won't be any issues with your water. Butch directed his gaze at the fat sheriff in the wide-brimmed cowboy hat.
What's with the gun, Sheriff? That really necessary for dealing with an old lady?
Kate turned to Butch, looking sour.
Who you calling old? You're as senile a coot as there is in the county.
Damn it, Kate, I'm as pissed about all this as you are, but I'm trying to help.
Don't need no help from a man who'd insult me like that.
I wasn't trying to...
Butch stammered as he worked to calm down.
Listen, all I'm trying to do is tell Sheriff Crowley and Mr. Holloway there ain't no need for guns.
Crowley spoke up, his pistol still trained on Kate.
Tell her that, Butch. She's the one making threats. Said she'd shoot us if we drove another inch on the property. Well, she's not serious, Sheriff. You and I both know.
The hell I ain't!
Kate turned, revealing what looked like an Old West six-shooter on her left hip.
Meant every damn word of it.
Butch shook his head and turned back, looking hopeless. Of course, Asadi didn't know what to do either. Kate had been as kind to him as a grandmother. He didn't like to see her so upset, and certainly didn't want to see her get hurt. Butch looked to Crowley.
Sheriff, if Kate meant business, she'd have sniped you with her 270 before you crossed the cattle guard a quarter of a mile back. If she can take down Pronghorn on the run at 300 yards, your fat ass wouldn't stand a chance.
Crowley bristled and turned his glare on Butch.
Is that right?
Asadi didn't know the full story, only that the Coles hated Crowley. It all had something to do with him being a crook and ties to the ruthless Kaiser family. The sheriff was slippery, Garrett had said, but his day was coming.
If Kate really wanted to shoot you, Butch stated flatly, you'd be shot.
Crowley turned his glare to Kate, his gun still leveled at her.
Talk her down, Butch.
Just as Kate looked to be softening, a seething truck driver who had been leaning against his rig broke into a sprint. She had just turned to him when he slammed into her, knocking Kate off the road and tumbling in a dust cloud into the bar ditch. Butch spurred Skip toward the driver and Kate. As she tried to rise, her attacker lunged again, but the old man had already wedged his horse between the two of them. As he fought off the driver, Crowley rushed in to grab Kate's pistol and knocked her back into the ditch by accident. She struggled to her feet with the help of a deputy, after stumbling on the first attempt. Kate's voice cracked as she faltered on wobbly legs.
Get your hands off me, damn it!
She was teary-eyed and red-faced, partially due to the intense heat, and partially from what Asadi assumed was embarrassment. Covered in dust and dried grass, she tried to pat herself clean, but it did more harm than good, spreading the dirt all over her tattered old blue jeans. The truck driver, still enraged, charged again, but Butch and his buckskin were an impenetrable wall. Wherever Kate's attacker went, so did Skip. The cutting horse did exactly what it was trained to do. But instead of preventing a calf from getting back to the herd, it stopped this foaming-at-the-mouth thug from attacking a woman half his size. This went on a few seconds, then Asadi saw Butch smile. The old man lined up his horse with the giant, gave a squeeze of the knees, and Skip lurched forward. The driver's eyes widened the moment he knew what was about to happen. It was a look of both fear and remorse. Butch and his buckskin had just bulldozed the driver and sent him tumbling into the ditch when Crowley moved in and aimed his pistol at Butch.
That's enough. Stop right there.
Butch did as commanded and brought Skip to a halt. The only thing that didn't change was his smile.
If you're so big on keeping people safe, Sheriff, then do your damn job. Then maybe I won't have to do it for you.
That's exactly what I'm doing.
The sheriff kept steady aim.
Now get on down from there. Real slow.
Butch raised his hands but didn't drop his grin.
Making a big mistake. You're the one made the mistake by interfering.
Butch scoffed as he looked at the truck driver, sitting dumbfounded in the weeds by the side of the road.
Seems to me you needed some interfering.
As soon as Butch dismounted, Crowley slipped on the shackles. The awful sight made Asadi's heart race.
What I do now, Butch?
The warmth in Butch's eyes covered Asadi like a blanket.
Don't worry one bit. We'll be fine. Just lead Skip back to the barn, get him and Grizz watered and fed, then go to the house and call Garrett. He's in town with Bridger. Anything this stupid, he eyed Crowley, we'll be taken care of in about 2 seconds.
Butch turned back to Asadi.
You good with that, sonny?
Asadi could only nod his response, feeling as though he might cry if he tried to speak. He stayed until Butch was driven away in the SUV, then watched as the trucks rumbled by. They left grit in his mouth and eyes burning as he fought back tears that dried in their dusty wake. 15. Garrett sat across the table from Butch and Kate at the Bucket Restaurant in Canadian after bailing them out of jail. With Bridger there to explain the seriousness of their legal situation, Garrett hoped the duo might come to their senses and be ready to repent. But neither possessed a lick of remorse. They'd even demanded breakfast before heading back to the ranch. When Kate excused herself to go to the restroom, Butch let his bravado slip.
Asadi okay? He didn't seem scared or nothing, did he?
Garrett was tempted to lay into the old man, but held back.
He's fine, Daddy. Sent Lacey out to look after him, but he was